Chapter 137. Farming in Polynesia, the planters were both whole-souled fellows, but, in other respects, as unlike as possible. One was a tall, robust Yankee, hern in the backwoods of Maine, sallow, and with a long face. The other was a short little Cockney, who at first clapped his eyes on the monument. The voice of Zeke, the Yankee, had a twang like a cracked vial, and Shorty, as his comrade called him, clipped the aspirate from every word beginning with one. The latter, though not the tallest man in the world, was a good-looking young fellow of 25. His cheeks were dyed with the fine Saxon red, burned deeper from his roving life. His blue eye opened well, and a profusion of fair hair curled over a well-shaped head. But Zeke was no beauty. A strong, ugly man, he was well adapted for manual labor, and that was all. His eyes were made to see with, and not for ogling. Compared with the Cockney, he was grave, and rather taciturn. But there was a deal of good old humor bottled up in him, after all. For the rest, he was frank, good-hearted, shrewd, and resolute, and like Shorty, quite illiterate. Though a curious conjunction, the pair got along together famously. But, as no two men were ever united in any enterprise without one getting the upper hand of the other, so in most matters Zeke had his own way. Shorty, too, had imbibed from him a spirit of invincible industry, and heaven only knows what ideas of making a fortune on their plantation. We were much concerned at this, for the prospect of their setting us, in their own persons, an example of downright hard labor, was anything but agreeable. But it was now too late to repent what we had done. The first day, thank fortune, we did nothing. Having treated us as guests thus far, they no doubt thought it would be wanting in delicacy to set us to work before the compliments of the occasion were well over. The next morning, however, they both looked businesslike, and we were put to. "Wall, bys, boys," said Zeke, knocking the ashes out of his pipe, "after breakfast he must get at it. Shorty, give Peter there the doctor, the big hoe, and Paul the other, and let's be off." Going to a corner, Shorty brought forth three of the implements, and distributing them impartially, trudged on after his partner, who took the lead with something in the shape of an axe. For a moment left alone in the house, we looked at each other, quaking. We were each equipped with a great clumsy piece of a tree, armed at one end with a heavy, flat mass of iron. The cutlery part especially adapted to a primitive soil was an importation from Sydney. The handles must have been of domestic manufacture. H-hoes, so-called, we had heard of, and seen, but they were harmless in comparison with the tools in our hands. "What's to be done with them?" inquired I of Peter. "Lift them up and down," he replied, "or put them in motion some way or other. Paul, we are in a scrape, but hark! They are calling," and shouldering the hose, off we marched. Apostrophe, apostrophe, our destination was the farther side of the plantation, where the ground, cleared in part, had not yet been broken up, but they were now setting about it. Upon halting, I asked why a plow was not used. Some of the young wild steers might be caught and trained for draft. Zeke replied that, for such a purpose, no cattle, to his knowledge, had ever been used in any part of Polynesia. As for the soil of Martyr, so obstructed was it with roots, crossing and recrossing each other at all points, that no kind of a plow could be used to advantage. The heavy Sydney hoes were the only thing for such land. Our work was now before us, but, previous to commencing operations, I endeavored to engage the Yankee in a little further friendly chat concerning the nature of virgin soils in general, and that of the Valley of Martyr in particular. So masterly a stratagem made Long Ghost brighten up, and he stood by ready to join in. But what our friend had to say about agriculture all referred to the particular part of his plantation upon which we stood. And having communicated enough on this head, to enable us to set to work to the best advantage, he fell to, himself, and Shorty, who had been looking on, followed suit. The surface, here and there, presented closely amputated branches of what had once been a dense thicket. They seemed purposely left projecting, as if to furnish a handle whereby to drag out the roots beneath. After loosening the hard soil, by dint of much thumping and pounding, the Yankee jerked one of the roots this way and that, twisting it round and round, and then tugging at it horizontally. "Come, lend us a hand," he cried, at last, and running up, we all four strained away in concert. The tough obstacle convulsed the surface with throes and spasms, but stuck fast, notwithstanding. "Dumb it," cried Zeke, "we'll have to get a rope. Run to the house, Shorty, and fetch one." The end of this being attached, we took plenty of room, and strained away once more. "Give us a song, Shorty," said the doctor, who was rather sociable, on a short acquaintance. Where the work to be accomplished is any way difficult, this mode of enlivening toil is quite efficacious among sailors. So willing to make everything as cheerful as possible, Shorty struck up, "Were you ever in Dumbarton?" A marvelously inspiring, but somewhat indecorous windlass chorus. At last, the Yankee cast a damper on his enthusiasm by exclaiming, in a pet, "Oh, dumb your singing. Keep quiet, and pull away." This we now did, in the most uninteresting silence, until, with a jerk that made every elbow hum, the root dragged out, and most inelegantly, we all landed upon the ground. The doctor, quite exhausted, stayed there, and, deluded into believing that, after so doughty a performance, we would be allowed a cessation of toil, took off his hat, and fanned himself. "Rather a hard customer, that, Peter," observed the Yankee, going up to him, "but it's no use for any on them to hang back, for I'm dumbed if they ain't got to come out, whether or no. Hurrah! Let's get at it agin." "Mercy!" ejaculated the doctor, rising slowly, and turning round. "He'll be the death of us." Falling to with our hose again, we worked singly, or together, as occasion required, until ooning time came. The period, so called by the planters, embraced about 3 hours, in the middle of the day, during which it was so excessively hot, in this still, brooding valley, shut out from the trades, and only open toward the leeward side of the island, that labor in the sun was out of the question. To use a hyperbolical phrase of Shorty's, it was odd enough to melt the nose off a brass monkey. Returning to the house, Shorty, assisted by old Tonoy, cooked the dinner, and, after we had all partaken thereof, both the Cockney and Zeke threw themselves into one of the hammocks, inviting us to occupy the other. Thinking it no bad idea, we did so, and, after skirmishing with the mosquitoes, managed to fall into a doze. As for the planters, more accustomed to ooning, they, at once, presented a nuptial back to each other, and were soon snoring away at a great rate. Tono I snoozed on a mat, in one corner. At last, we were roused by Zeke's crying out, "Up, eyes, up! Rise, and shine! Time to get at it agin!" Looking at the doctor, I perceived, very plainly, that he had decided upon something. In a languid voice, he told Zeke that he was not very well. Indeed, that he had not been himself for some time past, though a little rest, no doubt, would recruit him. The Yankee thinking, from this, that our valuable services might be lost to him altogether, were he too hard upon us at the outset, at once begged us both to consult our own feelings, and not exert ourselves for the present, unless we felt like it. Then, without recognizing the fact that my comrade claimed to be actually unwell, he simply suggested that, since he was so tired, he had better, perhaps, swing in his hammock for the rest of the day. If agreeable, however, I myself might accompany him upon a little bullock hunting excursion in the neighboring hills. In this proposition, I gladly acquiesced, though Peter, who was a great sportsman, put on a long face. The muskets and ammunition were forthwith got from overhead, and, everything being then ready, Zeke cried out, "Tonoy, come, Aramai. Get up, we want you for pilot. Shorty, my lad, look arter things, you know, and if he likes, why, there's some roots in the field yonder. Having thus arranged his domestic affairs to please himself, though little to Shorty's satisfaction, I thought, he slung his powder horn over his shoulder, and we started. Tono I was, at once, sent on in advance, and leaving the plantation, he struck into a path which led toward the mountains. After hurrying through the thickets for some time, we came out into the sunlight, in an open glade, just under the shadow of the hills. Here, Zeke pointed aloft to a beetling crack far distant, where a bullock, with horns thrown back, stood like a statue. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.